everyone. Welcome to our first podcast on the 2015 National Survey for Employer-Sponsored Health Plans. So for this survey, which Mercer has been doing for 30 years running now, we asked almost 2,500 employers of all sizes across many different industries across the country all about their health plans, everything from cost to plan design to new innovative measures they're taking to provide their employees with great health care. So today I'm being joined by Joan Smith and Barry Schulmeister. Joan and Barry are both consultants for Mercer. Joan working for mid-sized organizations, mostly under 500 employees, and Barry working with larger organizations. So we're very lucky to have Joan and Barry joining us now. They've been presenting about these survey findings very actively to a lot of different groups and organizations, and now you get to hear what they have to say about these trends and findings from the survey. So thank you for joining us, Joan and Barry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So the first thing that I wanted to ask you about were the top stories from this year's survey and why you think it's important that employers are aware of these top stories.
Okay. Well, I think we are pulling four main top stories out of the survey this year. The first one is about an explosive growth continues in consumer-directed health plans. It's spurred by the excise tax, but even though the excise tax has been delayed, consumer-directed health plans are a very important piece of employer strategies. Almost 3 out of 5 of large employers now offer a consumer-directed health plan. So that was one top story, continued growth there. Another top story was kind of a change in population health management, how employers are viewing that. It's not just the traditional way of disease management or health risk appraisals. Employers are really taking a much broader view around health management in terms of the culture of health and how it affects individual employees from a physical, emotional, and financial point of view. So changes in programs around population health management, but really changing that focus. A third top story was about new delivery models in the market. And here, there's just been an explosion of vendors who are focused in a lot of areas of healthcare delivery. Not so long ago, most employers just had their health management programs purchased from their insurance carrier, whatever was on the shelf. But today, we see ever more employers choosing from an expanded market of vendors that might specialize in any number of areas, from smoking to infertility to wellness to financial management. So that's a third story. And the final top story is really around diversity. It's not so much the old way of doing things. We see a lot of employers looking at a segmented workforce and looking at how to derive solutions that address each of those segments in very different ways. There's really no one-size-fits-all answer, and that's what we see employers really reacting to, looking at their population, trying to engage their population, trying to provide benefits to their population that speaks in a different way to different segments. I would say, Joan,
from the small employer point of view, I would say that the first two, the consumer-directed health plans and population health management, are very similar. But on the third, which is the idea of engaging specialty vendors and pulling some of your programs outside of your health plan, is less available to the small employer. They are more likely to have a very bundled solution from their health plan insurance carrier, and it's not really possible for them to do this. So we're still looking at them, looking at their insurers to see what they can get for free, particularly, and what they can get that's very easy to implement. So there's not quite the same level of sophistication. They see these things, they like these things, and I don't mean to imply that the people are not sophisticated, but they don't have the resources and the bandwidth to do these things separately or to carve them out.
Yeah, you're right. And one of the good news aspects, though, is those insurance carriers are doing a lot more than they used to.
Yes.
So there are more things available in terms of programs, focused solutions. So the insurance carriers are really responding to this market. And then I guess, Joan, you're seeing that the smaller employers really are picking up on that.
I mean, one of the things that they are doing, because they are relatively inexpensive, is things like challenges and campaigns that you can do with technology that don't cost a lot of money and get a lot of excitement and some employee engagement going, and are very effective. So that's the fun. That's the angry birds part of it.
All right, great. So let's talk a little bit about innovation. What were some of the most intriguing innovations that you saw in the employee benefit space this year?
We hear the word innovation a lot, and I think rather than specific programs, a couple of the areas that we really thought were innovative was one we've mentioned already, which was diversity. We asked this question, and a third of large employers are actually have or are in the process of finalizing a formal diversity and inclusion philosophy or mission statement. So we found that as a very interesting and innovative approach. And more to the point of health benefits, two-thirds of those organizations that said they had this diversity and inclusion program have actually tied their benefits strategy to that program. So diversity, again, a segmented workforce. We see that employers are trying to think a little bit more innovatively around how to deliver programs that really speak to the varied needs of that workforce. And one other place that we looked at was, again, how employers are taking an expanded look at the return on their investment in the various benefits programs. And what we found is that although most of the very largest employers, we asked them where they've tried to measure the value of their programs, by far, most of them have said they find these programs very effective. But interestingly, it's not just on the medical plan spend, but rather how it helps them run their business from a productivity, from an absence, from an attraction retention perspective. One of the innovative things that we see really is employers taking that expanded view of how benefits help them run their business.
And that's interesting for the smaller employers because they have always been challenged by the idea of a return on investment. So because they didn't have the volume to really see an impact on the healthcare plan, so the cost. So now they're looking at things like productivity and thinking, well, maybe this is an argument that I can make because this is something that my senior management will react to because I know that I can't show an impact on the cost. I don't have the volume and I don't have the time to do that. So that's something that's very interesting to them. The voluntary benefits piece, they're very interested in also because, again, they've been cutting back on the benefits plans. They've been cutting back on the medical plans. And they have been looking around for things to offer their employees to make up for that. So to get back to your talk about the explosion of consumer-directed health plans, when you have a high deductible plan, it's a kind of a no-brainer to offer people the kind of benefits that we didn't pay a lot of attention to a few years ago, like the critical illness and the hospital and the indemnity, right, which helps an employer hedge themselves against those large deductibles. And I know it's true in both the large employer and the small employer, but they feel for the employee when they're giving them a $2,000 deductible and they say, I don't know how my people are going to be able to handle this.
And you're right. And half of the employers that are offering voluntary benefits told us that one of the reasons that they're offering them is to reduce financial stress on employees, and that in many ways is often tied to the consumer-directed health plan.
That's a nice little segue into financial stress and resilience, because, which is
absolutely
something we were talking about earlier, because that is one of the things that the population health management topic has expanded greatly, as Barry said, and now employers are not so much focused on getting people to eat better and lose weight and exercise more, because those are kind of old news, and if you're not doing that, then shame on you. But the stress and the resilience and the idea that you can actually help people to manage that and make them more productive, again, gets back to this measuring the success of your program and showing it in a way that isn't just tied to the premium that you pay to an insurer, which has always been very difficult for a small employer to do.
So Joan and Barry, you work with a lot of different organizations across different industries and sizes. So what's something that you wish that more organizations and HR people knew or understood about the value of a benefits program?
You know, I think what we would like employers to understand more is that the survey data really supports taking action in your benefits programs really does produce results. And I don't just mean results in terms of saving medical dollars through a higher deductible, but results in terms of, again, your business. And a couple of things in the survey really support that. One of them is something we alluded to before when we asked employers to tell us, are the programs working? And in fact, they did. So there is statistical data from their employers where they came back and said, you know, we found that it helped us keep people on the job. It helped us with absence. It helped us with productivity. Many of them, of course, did say it helped us save money on the medical plan. But beyond that, there were so many other measures. And so we have data that supports that. And the other thing that we've looked at is kind of the tie between what you do, in particular, how much you do, to results. And again, we looked at how many best practice programs in many different areas employers are actually engaged in. And what we found was that the group at the top that are doing the most in the top 25% of companies compared to those that are doing the least, we found again for perhaps the fifth year in a row that those companies that are doing the most are actually seeing lower costs and lower trends than those that are involved in the fewest number of programs. And so what we've used as a kind of a strategy piece, and what we hope many employers use as a strategy piece, is taking a look at these best practices and really saying, you know what, if I'm not doing a lot of these, maybe I can, and there is this correlation that we're seeing in our results to better costs and better trends.
Right. And I would say we have sorted those into three buckets. And the left-hand bucket is the one on plan design. And that's the one that's most available to the small employer. Because although they can do a lot in the population health, when you get to the delivery systems, they're a little bit challenged. Because they, as I say, they're tied to the insurance carrier and mostly insured plans. But on the left-hand side, when we go see a client to set strategy for the year, we print out that page and we put a little star on all the things that they do so they can see right away how many things they do and how many things they don't do. And it's a great conversation starter. So even though they can't really go onto the right-hand side where we have things like data warehousing, which doesn't mean anything to a 400-life group, or accountable care organizations, which they have to rely on their insurance carrier to provide. And I would say that in the New York area, that's a very regional thing. You'll do better in other parts of the country than you will do here for that. So they are kind of constrained a little bit towards the left-hand side of our chart, but it is very definitely a roadmap and something that we use in all of our conversations. Yeah.
There are things on this, as you say, the far side of the yes. of the chart, like centers of excellence and telemedicine mm-hmm. that even the smaller employers can at least engage in and incorporate. Mm-hmm. They may not have quite as much flexibility, but there are places, whether it's in the traditional design, whether it's in the well-being area, or whether it's in this kind of far side, cutting edge areas that they can really touch.
Yes.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much, Barry and Joan, for spending some time with us today. This was fantastic, and I think everyone will have some great things to take away with them today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.